Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 230 event, which takes place in New York, New York. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley won 1.75 units for UFC Fight Night 138 with his one-unit free bet on Talita Bernardo at plus 175 odds. Kyle has his bets and fantasy MMA picks available now on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC 230 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the card on Fight Pass is a heavyweight contest between Adam Wyzerek, who is 10-1, and Marcos Rogério de Lima, who is 15-6-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Wyzerek opened minus 350, the comeback in de Lima plus 250, and that's according to our MMA odds reaction piece from Adam Martin on MMAoddsbreaker.com, so make sure you check that out. All the opening odds are listed there. So Wyzerek, again, minus 350, the comeback in de Lima plus 250. Right now, looking over a sponsored sportsbook, BetDSI, it's Wyzerek minus 220, the comeback on de Lima is at plus 180. Interesting fight, interesting matchup. Of course, Wyzerek stepping in on short notice, so this fight got put together late. You know, I don't think that's going to matter too much here because I think this fight definitely finishes before we see it go on too long, at least. I mean, both these guys have the potential to finish. I know Wyzerek is not as dangerous, especially on the feet. He doesn't have that knockout power. He had a really nice submission win in his last fight over Buehler, so he has the capabilities of finishing more so on the ground than even standing, but he's a pretty well-rounded mixed martial artist. I think, in fact, he's more well-rounded than de Lima overall, and I think he's a little bit more technical. He's going to have some size as well, but de Lima is moving up to heavyweight for this fight, and so he'll definitely be comfortable. He'll be strong. The guy's definitely a threat on the feet as well. He's got a ton of power, and if he gets around your neck and has submission ability to finish as well with that power. So de Lima is a very dangerous person to be in there against. And right now at the current odds being, again, minus 220 plus 180, obviously the early action coming in at de Lima because of that danger. So this is not going to be an easy fight. It's definitely a dog or pass situation. Wouldn't lay it on Wyzerek for sure. I think it's a dangerous spot to be in, but I do think that he's opportunistic enough that if he gets a spot, he could put de Lima away, whether it's on the ground. Or like I said, I just don't trust de Lima as far as his overall conditioning goes either. So I think Wyzerek does get the W here, but again, it's not a spot that you can actually lay the chalk. So it's a dog or pass situation. I understand why the early action came in that way, and I understand why there's a lot of people that are supporting de Lima in this fight as well. So I get it. I wouldn't lay the chalk either, but I have to pick Wyzerek because I do think he's the better mixed martial artist as a whole. So we'll go that route for now.
This fight's really interesting because you would think that if somebody was taking this fight on short notice, it would be de Lima at heavyweight, but de Lima was scheduled to fight at heavyweight all along on this card, making his return to heavyweight here. And Wyzerek's actually stepping in for Ruslan Magomedov, who had visa issues. I mean, this is only like a week's notice, too, for Wyzerek. So, you know, and I don't think he had any fights scheduled or anything, so very interesting that he's able to step in on super short notice like this. And what's, you know, really intriguing is, you know, Wyzerek still really hasn't faced a really super talented heavyweight in the UFC heavyweight division, and this is his third fight now at heavyweight. You know, he faced Blar, who's still very raw, had pulled off that Omoplata submission against him in his last fight. He took on Anthony Hamilton and pulled off a decision victory against him. So now he's facing de Lima, who has basically been a light heavyweight his whole UFC run. So Wyzerek, he's pretty well-rounded, doesn't have hardly any power on the feet. He's really not much of a striker. He's more of a guy that is an opportunistic fighter where, he was opportunistic in terms of getting that, omoplata in his last fight. You know, he survived getting taken down against Anthony Hamilton and ended up winning a decision there. So against De Lima, though, I think he's going to be on the losing end of striking exchanges, despite having a 6-inch reach advantage and being 4 inches taller. Like, Weizerick is definitely a more natural heavyweight than De Lima. So De Lima is going to be giving up some serious size here. And that is probably my biggest question mark in this fight. You know, De Lima hasn't fought in a year and a half, as well due to a tainted supplement that he took. But, the biggest question here is, how is he going to overcome the size disadvantage? Like, if Weizerick can bully him around a little bit, that's probably his best path to victory. Get this fight in the clinch. Maybe try to put De Lima on his back. De Lima is really only good when he's being offensive. Defensively, you know, he's given up his neck to Nikita Krylov out of nowhere at light heavyweight. You know, and De Lima really hasn't picked up any quality wins in the light heavyweight division in the UFC against people that stuck around. And all of his losses are against, more of the legitimate opponents he faced. So, you know, if Weizerick is legit, then he can definitely win this fight. But I feel like he's super overrated due to his lack of power, his lack of like really consistent wrestling and submission ability. And even though De Lima is giving up size here, I'm actually going to pick him. I think De Lima can outstrike him. And I think as long as De Lima doesn't get stuck on his back, then there's a decent chance that he could even outgrapple him. So my pick is going to be Marcos Rogério de Lima getting a win in his move up to the heavyweight division. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Brian Kelleher, who is 19-9, taking on Montel Jackson, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Kelleher opened -185 to come back on Jackson at +145. And right now we're seeing over at BetDSI, it is actually Jackson, the favorite, -130. The comeback on Kelleher is at plus even money. So right now, -130, even money. Line flipped, a little bit more action coming in Jackson's way. The line did escalate to about 160-ish or so, and then it dropped back down. So there's action coming back in on Kelleher. So most books right now are fairly even on this fight, despite the line flip. So it should be a very competitive fight. I mean, this is a good test for both guys. I know Kelleher, obviously the experienced vet at this point in comparison to Jackson, that is, because Jackson, this is only his second fight. And then he had a heck of a debut against Simone, which was a very, very tough fight. It was a pretty competitive fight. I mean, it was one that he definitely hung in there with. But I think Simone is one of the best guys in the weight class for sure at this point right now. I mean, he's proven that time and time again. He's fought a lot of solid fighters so far in the bantamweight division. So, and he's been looking good. I think this is going to kind of be a step down. It's crazy to say for Jackson, but I think it really is. I think Kelleher is a very game opponent as well. I mean, he's looked good. He's got a well-rounded skill set. He's dangerous on the feet. He's more dangerous on the ground with his submission ability. I mean, he gets around your neck. I was talking about chokes, guillotine chokes, armbar submissions. I mean, Kelleher is a dangerous dude. Very opportunistic. We were talking about Weizerick in the last fight. I mean, Kelleher's very much the same, but he's smart. I mean, his fight IQ is very – very good. I mean, he's the type of fighter that, again, you get in a bad spot on the ground, he's going to finish the fight. He puts a lot of pressure on you on the feet as well, pins you up against the cage, tries to control the fight. I just don't think he's going to have all that much success against Jackson here. Jackson, of course, having the wrestling background, he's going to have extremely long reach and some striking ability here over Kelleher. I think Kelleher's a solid striker, as I said, but I think Jackson's just a little bit better. And with the reach advantage, with his ability to work in the clinch a little bit here in this spot as well, I think he's going to end up landing often on Kelleher and getting in trouble, really. So a good fight, again, a good test for both guys here. I just think that Jackson's attributes just match up a little bit better with Kelleher's at this point, and I think it's going to be a really solid win in his second fight in the UFC, because again, I have a ton of respect for Kelleher. I think he's a very good fighter, a tough out, but I think this is a matchup that Jackson can win. So my pick is Jackson to win, probably on the scorecards, but if there's going to be a finish here, I think there's a possibility Jackson can do it as well. I think he'd get the knockout over Kelleher as the fight progresses, possibly. But again, more so than not, it probably hits the scorecards, and I think Jackson squeezes out a close competitive fought decision.
Yeah, this is the fight on the card where the numbers are just insane. Even with De Lima moving up to heavyweight in that previous fight, he's not even giving up close to as much size as Brian Kelleher is to Montel Jackson in a fight where both guys have pretty much been bantamweights for most of their career. Kelleher, 9-inch reach disadvantage against Jackson. That is tremendous, especially in a bantamweight fight. I mean, Jackson has the reach of a light heavyweight, which is just insane. So if he can use it properly, I mean, Kelleher's going to be in big trouble. I mean, Kelleher in his last fight got outstruck 2-1 by John Lineker, a guy that was a former flyweight that actually is still the flyweight size, and he just swings really aggressively in his fights. So if Jackson can, turn up the volume a little bit and really keep Kelleher at the end of his punches, this is going to be a really, really tough test and tough night for Kelleher. Now, in Jackson's last fight, both of these guys actually lost their last UFC fights. But Jackson got exposed a little bit in terms of takedown defense and ground defense. Now, Kelleher is exceptional on the canvas, and if he can get Jackson on his back, then he's going to be in pretty good shape because, Jackson can definitely be out-grappled. Now, Jackson does have a pretty good wrestling base, so I don't think it's going to be easy for Kelleher to get takedowns. He's going to probably have to clip Jackson on the feet to set up a takedown or at least be competitive enough with Jackson to get him to lower his guard a little bit and then shoot in when he, maybe if Jackson overcommits to a strike. But I think it's going to be a very difficult time for Kelleher to get this fight to the floor, which is where he needs to take it if he wants to win. Because even though Kelleher has had some pretty decent stand-up performances against Stasiak and Hayden Barrow, I just think Jackson's going to keep him at the end of his super long reach here, being three or 4 inches taller and then having the 9-inch reach advantage. Jackson knows how to use it too. And you saw on his Tuesday Night Contender Series fight, I mean, this guy hits hard from distance. He can lay into you with knees, with kicks as well. I think Kelleher is going to be in for a world of hurt on the feet. Jackson just needs to turn up the aggression a little bit. I thought in his last fight he was a little too tentative at times, being too concerned about the takedowns. And then that allowed Ricky Simone to actually be competitive on the feet as well. So this time around, though, I think Jackson bounces back. Even though Kelleher is a very tough out and he has some quality wins in his career, I just think this is a bad stylistic matchup, and I think Jackson gets the job done probably by decision and just outpointing Kelleher along the way. Now, moving up to the featherweight division, we have Shane Burgos, who is 10-1, taking on Kurt Hollabaugh, who is 17-5 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Burgos opened -300, the comeback on Hollabaugh at +220. Right now, over at BetDSI, it's Burgos -360, the comeback is +270 on Hollabaugh. So, line mergers have tightened up and a little bit more action coming in Burgos' way. Unfortunately for Hollabaugh, I think he lost a little bit of respect amongst the UFC bettors in his last fight when he got finished by Barcelos late in that fight. Barcelos is a pretty good fighter, the type of fighter that's improved a whole lot, and I think he's going to definitely show more than he just did against Hollabaugh in the featherweight division in the UFC roster. I think so. People are going to have their eyes open even more so by Barcelos. So that's not necessarily a bad loss, I think, for Hollabaugh. So don't count him out of this fight either. I know Burgos has been a stud, man. He's looked great overall at featherweight. I know in his last fight, though, he actually got a little bit exposed against Cater. I mean, that was a heck of a fight back and forth. I mean, Burgos was doing extremely well, and then he got finished late in that fight as well, like a surprising loss. A lot of us were in shock. So Burgos is definitely looking to rebound and get back on track here against a very game opponent, Hollabaugh. This should be an awesome fight. I think both these guys are going to have their moments. But what it comes down to here, I think, is a little bit of power and a little bit of wrestling. I think Hollabaugh, again, very well-rounded fighter. I think he's going to be able to hang with Burgos on the feet. In fact, he might be, I don't want to say a little bit more technical, but I think he has a pretty diverse skill set that will probably match Burgos in all areas except the pure punching power. I think Burgos definitely hits a lot harder, obviously. He's got that killer instinct, that aggression. And again, Hollabaugh coming off that knockout loss, I'm starting to worry about him because he's had quite a long MMA career. And I think in MMA years, even though he's only 32 years old, I think he's beyond that. So I think he's fighting really good. He deserves this shot in the UFC, and I'm hoping he has some success outside of this fight because I don't expect him to win it. And I hope the UFC does keep him on the roster, but this is, could be a spot for Hollow Ball. What I'm trying to spit out here is we could see the start of a decline, even though he's been fighting pretty good before he made this little UFC stint here. So this means a lot for both fighters. I think the winner of this fight definitely takes a huge step forward. And I think that probably is going to be Burgos getting back on track here. I mean, he's looked good outside of that round three in his last fight. I mean, the guy has delivered, and we thought he was a legit contender on his way up to a title shot eventually. So Burgos, I think, can get back on track and be that guy that we all think. And again, he has more ways to win. I think he can control the wrestling if he wants to in this fight as well, maybe get top position on Hollow Ball. And then on the feet, he's going to be laying in the harder punches, probably hurting Hollow Ball along the way. But it should be a scrap, should be fireworks, should be a fun fight, and I can't wait to watch it. So the pick is Burgos, a tough one to bet, especially at the current line right now. I mean, Hollow Ball could have some value. If Hollow Ball doesn't get finished in this fight and it hits the scorecards, I think it'll be fairly competitive, but I do expect Burgos to edge out the cards as well. So should be a good fight. Like I said, I'm going to pick Burgos to get the W here.
And I'm going to go with Burgos as well. You know, Kurt Hollowball had a very nice run outside the UFC, but under the Zuffa banner, he has just had a really tough time of it. The only win he's had was on the Tuesday Night Contender Series, as far as I know. And even that got turned into a no contest because of an unfortunate situation with Hollow Ball. But overall, you know, Shane Burgos, you know, this is a New York-based fight. Shane Burgos is one of the standout Tiger Showman fighters, a very well-rounded, nasty dude that had, you know, was on the rise before he got cut down by Cater. And I expect Burgos to get the job done here. I mean, on the feet, Burgos should have the edge in terms of mixing it up, in terms of volume. Both guys are similar in terms of accuracy, but Burgos is a lot better at defending himself. So I think that he's going to be connecting on Hollow Ball, while Hollow Ball is going to have a little bit more trouble finding that big shot. And if Shane Burgos wants, he has, you know, a really good wrestling game as well. And Kurt Hollow Ball can be exposed on the ground. Hollow Ball was taken down repeatedly by Pat Healy back in Strikeforce. And I could totally see Shane Burgos winning this fight on the canvas if he gets concerned about what's going on the feet whatsoever. So I just think the fact that Burgos is the more well-rounded guy, he has a little bit more to give in terms of his MMA career. He's still, even though he's coming off of the knockout loss, he still has a lot more potential. And I think this is definitely Burgos's fight to lose. I think he can win it standing. I think he can win it on the ground. So I'm going to pick him to win. Now this takes us to the main event of the Fight Pass prelims. We have Matt Frevola, who is 6-1, taking on Lando Venata, who is 9-3-1. And this is in the lightweight division. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Venata open -285, the comeback on Frevola +205. So right now, looking over at BetDSI, Venata is a -270. The comeback on Frevola is at +215. So line margins have tightened up. The opener was pretty solid, staying steady. I think there is going to continue to be two-way action on this fight as well. A lot of people are definitely going to underestimate Frevola in this spot here against Venata. Venata, you know, from his UFC debut when he stepped in on short notice and took on Tony Ferguson, he opened up a lot of eyes. I mean, there was a lot of hype coming into that fight from him outside of the UFC as well, like getting some wins. A lot of people thought he was a legit prospect. So heading into that Ferguson fight, not, you know, those people in the know weren't even that surprised that he did so well against Ferguson early on in that fight. Of course, he ended up losing that fight, but then had a successful second fight in the UFC, knocking out McDessie and, you know, in fashion with that wheel kick. I mean, that was a beautiful thing of beauty. Outside of that, though, he's had some wars against solid competition. That fight with Tamer was a very close competitive decision. Obviously, he had a draw against Bobby Green. And then Drakkar Klose, another one that was very close, but he lost a decision too as well. So he's a type of fighter that tends to slow down in fights, and he actually fights up to the level of his competition, I think, fight by fight. That's why he has all these close wars. So I think this is another spot where if he doesn't get rid of Frevola early in this spot, I think he's going to have another competitive war. And Frevola is a type of fighter that, again, I know against Reyes, he came out there and got his clock cleaned early, and a lot of people are going to underestimate him, think he's a bit chinny. Reyes has a ton of power, and his striking ability is very underrated. So I don't necessarily think that's a shocker of a loss, and I don't think it's a very bad loss actually either. And even though Vanetta is definitely an unorthodox striker who has the ability to finish fights on the feet, I mean, he's a talented striker, no doubt about it. I think Frevola's striking ability in this spot is going to probably hang in there well. And as the fight progresses, I actually think that Frevola is going to do even better and possibly steal round two and round three. So this is the spot that I can definitely see the underdog coming through. Again, I think a lot of people are just going to underestimate him, and he's not as bad as everybody thinks, especially in his UFC debut. So he has a well-rounded game. He has a lot of power on the feet. He's got some takedown ability. He's got a solid ground game. And again, I think he's going to be able to push the pace as the fight progresses a little bit, get more confidence as he gets in round two and round three, if he doesn't get finished early on in round one. So, you know, it could be a live dog here for sure. So it's a dog or pass. I would not lay the chalk here on Vanetta either. Vanetta, unfortunately for him, I think it's going to be possibly another loss for him, you know, coming into this fight. And if so, I'm not sure if the UFC is going to keep him on roster. If you look at his overall UFC record, which is a shocker, because again, we all thought that he was a possible title contender at one time or another. So big fight, important fight for both guys here. Frevola, if he wants to get that respect again from the fans, from the UFC, he needs to win this fight. And I think matchmaking was pretty smart here, actually, because Vanetta wins over Frevola. He saves his job, gets back on track a little bit. And if Frevola gets a win over Vanetta, it's a respectable win, and it could definitely open up some eyes for a lot of people here. So good matchmaking. I like it. I think it's going to be a competitive fight. Both guys have a lot to offer here. But I'm going to actually pick the underdog, Frevola, to come through here and get the upset win. I think it's I don't know. It's one of those fights that definitely is flying under the radar, and I think Frevola is a lot better than most people think again. So the pick is Frevola to pull off the slight upset here.
And I can completely understand the Frevola pick, because the guy does have some power in his hands, and he does have pretty decent takedowns and a pretty nasty offensive submission game. And if Vanetta makes mistakes, he could get put on his back. He could get clipped. That being said, I think Vanetta is a very talented offensive striker with a diverse skill set on the feet. I mean, the guy can just mix it up with the spinning attacks, with the crazy kicks. I mean, he just is a very unorthodox, super entertaining striker. And he's been kind of a huge letdown so far. I mean, he entered the UFC as a short notice replacement, almost takes out Tony Ferguson in his UFC debut. And he's still kind of living off of that wave of the almost, you know, did it. And that's kind of been the story of his entire UFC run. You know, he almost got Ferguson, but then, you know, eventually got overwhelmed and lost. And then, you know, lives up to the hype with this awesome finish of John McDessie, but then loses completely, gets outclassed by David Tamer. Then almost takes out Bobby Green, ends up getting a draw, and then in his last fight, you know, it was competitive, but, you know, loses to Drakkar Close. So, you know, he just hasn't lived up to the potential, but the potential's still there. But expectations definitely are starting to be decreased a little bit with Lando Vanetta. So if, you know, he does not go out there and crack Frevola with, you know, something nasty with some spinning attacks, I think he could be in trouble. Frevola got exposed a little bit in that fight with Reyes, because while he does have power and he is aggressive, he also swings with these big looping shots. And Reyes just had these beautiful, swift counters right down the middle, short hooks that caught Frevola right on the chin every time, and eventually hurt him real bad, and then eventually put him out. So that's really not Vanetta's style. Vanetta's more of the guy that is the one pushing the pace, getting in your face. He's not the counter striker. So what'll be interesting is that both of these guys like to move forward, and who's going to be the one that kind of gives a little bit in that department. I think it'll be Frevola that backs off a little bit and looks for opportunities for takedowns, maybe, if Vanetta is being too aggressive. I think that plays into Vanetta's game, cause he likes to be the aggressor. He likes to be pushing the pace. If Frevola is on his back foot, that also makes, his striking a lot less dangerous. So, I'm going to favor Vanetta here. I'm a little concerned about him slowing down as this fight goes on. I'm a little concerned about him getting taken down. I'm a little concerned about him eating a big shot because he's being too aggressive. And the fact that Vanetta is no longer at Greg Jackson's, although, you know, he wasn't really getting results at Greg Jackson's. So there's a lot of things to be concerned about with Vanetta, but, you know, I'm going to ignore all the warning signs and pick him anyway. I do think that there is no value whatsoever on his current line. And if there is a bet to make, it might be on Frevola. But my pick is going to be on Lando Vannetta. Now, moving on to the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a welterweight contest between Lyman Good, who is 19-4 with one no contest, taking on Ben Killaby Saunders, who is 22-10-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Good open minus 350. The comeback on Saunders at plus 250. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's actually Good minus 710. The comeback is plus 460 on Saunders. So needless to say, the betting action all came in on Good. And why that is, styles make fights. And as we know, I mean, Saunders is coming off of, somewhat surprising loss in his last fight, domination, I mean, to the hand of Sergio Moraes, because I thought Moraes might have a little bit more trouble against Saunders, and I thought they actually would match up and make up for a funner fight, but Moraes just dominated that fight. So that tells you the levels of ground ability that Moraes has. So not necessarily a bad thing for Saunders, because Saunders steps in there in the cage in most aspects and has a big advantage over most people in the ground game, and that's why he's so dangerous and well-rounded in most times. But again, I was surprised that he got dominated that bad. Now, in this case, he's not going to have to worry about that as much. Obviously, Good is not going to go out there looking to submit Saunders, so he's going to have a significant edge on the ground in this spot, and I think that's where he can win this fight, if anything, because on the feet, I know Saunders has some potential. He's got some ability. He's got some length. He's got a good kicking game. He's got a ton of experience, so he's not a bad striker, but that's where Good, I think, is going to piece him apart. And that's why everybody's coming in this spot, because Good has decent takedown defense. So this fight's probably going to have to remain on the feet. And if that's the case, Saunders has been chinny in the past. We know that he takes a lot of punishment. Good is a very solid fighter. He has a solid chin. He's got good IQ. Again, I think he has good enough takedown defense where he's going to be able to keep this fight where he wants it. If he wants to get top position on the ground against Saunders, then he can get it down and put Saunders on the ground. And I don't know if that's exactly what he wants to do here. And I think he's smart enough to realize you don't want to fiddle around too much in Saunders' guard, but again, Good has pretty decent submission defense, so I think even if he does get top position at some point, I don't think he gets submitted by Saunders. But with all that being said, again, I think more so than anything, this fight is going to be more of your striker versus grappler matchup, and I think the striker is going to be Good that ends up knocking out Saunders in this spot. So Saunders, man, he's been through so many wars throughout his career. I don't know. I mean, I almost want the guy to hang him up, because I don't want to see him take any more beatings or get knocked out, because, man, I mean, even just this last little run that he's had recently in the UFC, it's been kind of brutal for his career. He's had some good times for sure. He's had some good spots and good moments still that, you know, kind of proves that he does belong in roster. But from a health sake, from a health perspective, in this spot here against a fighter like Good that can do some damage against Saunders, it's not a good thing. So that's why everybody's coming in here as well, and that's why the line ballooned up to minus 710. I don't think it's going to be an upset here. I think Good is going to deliver. Obviously, you guys can't touch this line. I mean, even though I'm making it sound like it's an easy win for Good, and I expect it to be, there's no value where it's at now. I mean, at the opener, those of you guys that got in at minus 350, hats off to you. You got a good price. I do think you were right. But from this point on, just stay away. Watch a fight. Watch probably Good finish Saunders before it ends. So the pick is Good to win.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with Lyman Good as well. It feels like, you know, Ben Saunders is nearing the end of his, not just UFC run, but potentially MMA run. The guy is always going to be entertaining, has a nice personality and everything, and has some quality finishes in his career, but he's taken a little bit too much damage. He's a little too chinny at this point, and Lyman Good hits like a tank. Saunders is also kind of stepping in on short notice for this one, and I just think that it's a bad stylistic matchup. I mean, unless Saunders can really catch Good in a tie clinch or something and just start wailing away with knees and elbows, I think Lyman Good is going to just outbox Saunders. And the second that Good connects with Saunders' chin with something even half decent, I don't think Saunders will be able to weather it. Saunders does have the advantage on the ground, but, you know, how does he get it there? I mean, unless Saunders gets dropped and Good dives into his guard, I just don't see this fight going to the canvas and Saunders being able to utilize his ground game. So I just think this is a really bad stylistic matchup. Lyman Good is very big, strong, hits hard, And I think that he's just going to kind of stalk down Ben Saunders and try to put him away with every shot he throws. And eventually something's going to land that probably does put Ben Saunders away. So while Saunders is going to be game, it feels like he is on the last legs a little bit. And I do think that, Lyman Good gets the job done here and probably does finish Ben Saunders by knockout or TKO. Now, dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Julio Arce, who is 15-2, taking on Shaymon Moraes, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Arce opened minus 165, the comeback of Moraes at plus 125. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's minus 270 for Arce. The comeback is plus 215 on Moraes. Man, tough one here because you have a striker versus striker matchup. Both these guys, of course, are more well-rounded than that. Especially Arce. I think he's even more well-rounded of the two, but both these guys have decent experience. Moraes, even though he's hasn't had a ton of fights in the UFC, he's got some solid experience in other leagues, outside of the UFC before he made his debut against decent competition, of course, as well. So, and Arce, again, he's fought in some, you know, pretty decent competition before he made his UFC debut. But these guys, since they've come to the UFC, they've been impressive and they've showed that they belong for sure. Arce obviously being a little bit more impressive because he's just been able to dismantle his opponents along the way. And man, the guy does have some precision striking. It's, I mean, it's a thing of beauty watching him fight. He's got some decent takedown defense as well. He's got some good fight IQ, ground awareness. And I think he only gets better fight by fight. So that's a scary thing, for Moraes, obviously, because I think this is going to be a tough fight for him, but I think he's game. And I think the striking matchup here for both fighters is going to be interesting. I think Moraes mixes everything up a little bit more. I think he's more dangerous with, I think more parts of his body, meaning his kicking aspect, his knees, his elbows. I think he's a little bit more dangerous in those aspects, but again, Arce, I think he has good boxing. I think he's going to push the pace. I think he's going to be in Moraes' face. So this is going to be quite a battle. And I'm not surprised that the public bet up the line early on and Arce is a bigger favorite now, but at the same time, I think they're disrespecting Moraes because I think Moraes' takedown defense is probably good enough to keep this fight upright. And Arce, he doesn't go for a lot of takedowns anyway. So I think he's going to want to keep this fight upright and it should be a striking affair. And if that's the case, it's going to be a competitive one. So I can see these guys hurting each other. I can see both these guys doing damage along the way. So I think this has potential to be a 3-round war and another fun fight. So again, good matchmaking here. I've been kind of going back and forth on this fight. I think I'm going to go with the conditioning and the precision of Arce to beat Moraes. It's not a very confident pick though, because I do think Moraes is that game in this fight here. So obviously it's a dog or pass situation. There's no doubt about it. You cannot lay the juice in this spot either. There's a lot of dog or pass situations on this card, honestly. So if you're betting favorites on this card, I would definitely be cautious. And this is another spot that you have to definitely keep your eyes open for. So it's dog or pass with Moraes. I think there is some value now, especially after the line got bet up a little bit. I think the original opener was a little bit more fair, to be honest with you. So that said, I'm still picking Arce to win. I think I like what I see a little bit more, and I trust him a little bit more at this point than Moraes, but I think Moraes is going to be very game. And like I said, it should be an exciting fight. So I'm hoping for a 3-round stand-up war. And I think it might deliver just as that. So the pick is Arce to win.
And I expect this fight to be a 3-round stand-up war. And that's actually why I think that Shaymon Moraes is an extremely live dog. Arce is the more well-rounded of the two because he has a very legitimate ground game. It's just he doesn't have a great path to take the fight to the ground because – like Nick said, he doesn't attempt takedowns. He has not pulled off one takedown in his entire UFC run so far. And while he did get a submission in his last fight, that was actually because his opponent slipped and fell down, and Arce just kind of jumped on him and then put him away with the submission, and his opponent was gassed. This time around, though, Shaymon Moraes, you know, this is a guy that is just as big as Arce in the featherweight division. Moraes actually is slightly longer, maybe like half an inch taller, couple inches in reach. And Moraes comes from a strong kickboxing background. So while Arce does have a very legitimate technical boxing style, Moraes is going to be mixing it up with a lot of punches, elbows, kicks, knees. And he goes to the legs, he goes to the body. I mean, he changes his targets constantly. And I think that that is going to keep Arce on his toes a little bit. You know, Arce, is willing to even give up a round as he tries to figure out his opponent. And that could definitely come back to bite him here against somebody like Moraes, who, took on a really quality UFC opponent in his last fight against Sales and ended up walking away with winning the first two rounds and taking the decision. So, and against Arce, I don't think that Moraes is going to be pushed quite as hard as he did in the Sales fight. So I think that he'll have his conditioning will be a little bit stronger here. Moraes also is going to be a little bit more dangerous in the clinch with the elbows and knees. So I think this is going to be a very competitive fight. I think Arce has looked good in his UFC run so far, but he really hasn't fought anybody yet. And Moraes is definitely going to be an extremely stiff test. I mean, if this fight goes to the ground, I definitely favor Arce. I mean, he could absolutely finish Moraes with a submission. It's just, will it go to the ground? And if it doesn't go to the ground, I think it's up in the air, and Moraes absolutely is good enough on the feet that this is going to be a very competitive fight. I mean, if it was just a boxing match, I would favor Arce. But with it being, you know, anything goes on the feet, and the fact that Moraes mixes it up so well, I actually do think that Moraes has a very legitimate chance of walking away with a victory here. Especially if he can, you know, just outwork Arce and mix it up a little bit more, especially because Arce is so heavy on his lead legs, could leave him open to some heavy leg kick attacks and body attacks. So I think Shaman Reyes can absolutely pull this off, so I'm going to pick him to pick up a pretty heavy upset on this card. And so Shaman Reyes is my pick. Now dropping down to the women's flyweight division, we have Cesara Eubanks, who is 4-2, taking on Roxanne Modafferi, who is 22-15. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Eubanks opened -380, the comeback of Modafferi +260, and right now over BetDSI, it's -610 for Eubanks, and the comeback is +410 on Modafferi. So, needless to say, public bet up Eubanks overall, a lot of early action coming in that way. Hey, styles make fights. I mean, these ladies competed not too long ago. We all know that Eubanks got the decision win. I think this time it might be a little bit more clear, and no disrespecting Modafferi. In fact, I mean, she's one of my favorite female fighters of all time, honestly, because of the effort she puts in, the ability, her ability to get better. I mean, she's always had a good ground game and have been a warrior at heart, but I just, her improvements the last few years because of her ability to work hard and her wanting to be good and getting herself in contention like she has, you got to take your hat off to her. So you would never, I don't know, you just don't expect that from, you know, a fighter like Modafferi, I guess, overall, and she's put the work in and she deserves it. So I think she's a nightmare for a lot of ladies in the flyweight division, but for Eubanks, she's not, because styles make fights. Like I said, I think Eubanks is a better striker. She's a better wrestler. I think her ground defense is good enough that she's not going to get into too much trouble on the ground with Modafferi either. So this is just a difficult fight for Modafferi to win. And I think with the UFC, not that they're giving her a bone here, but you know, obviously she was supposed to fight Shevchenko and she got disappointed when the fight, you know, the UFC switched it up with everybody in the world complaining that that fight was no good. I don't blame them. I mean, honestly, we wanted to see a better matchup for Shevchenko, obviously. No disrespecting Eubanks in that spot, but of course, you know, I mean, we're all fans at heart and we want to see the best matchups possible. So Eubanks, after a win here against Modafferi, I think she'll get herself in the mix and, you know, we could potentially see her get a title shot soon. So this fight, not much more to say, really. Like I said, I think even though Modafferi is very game and she's going to win her share of fights in the flyweight division, this is just a bad stylistic matchup. Eubanks is better in pretty much every area, and I think it's going to show here. So Eubanks should win a clear-cut decision. I wouldn't be surprised if she ends up stopping Roxy. I know Roxy's tough as heck, but I think Eubanks, again, she has a little bit of a chip on her shoulder. As the fight progresses here, we might even see a finish by the end of three rounds here if Eubanks can maybe land some significant punishment on the feet here. So the pick is Eubanks here, though, no doubt.
And I'm going to go with Eubanks as well. I mean, both of these ladies fought each other already, and Eubanks clearly was the better fighter before. And while Modafferi has made strides and improved her stand-up and her ground and pound, even with the most recent TKO finish over Barb Honchak, she's still behind Eubanks in terms of strength, speed, power. I mean, you just name it, youth, overall wear and tear from injuries and everything. I mean, the only thing that Modafferi really has is experience. because I mean, even Eubanks might be better in terms of ground game as well. I just think this is a really, really bad stylistic matchup for Modafferi. I understand she's taken the fight just to get back on the title picture, after Eubanks became available, but, I just don't think that this is a favorable matchup for her whatsoever. The only thing Modafferi has going for her is maybe Eubanks has a terrible weight cut and Modafferi can kind of outlast her. And if Eubanks fades, maybe Modafferi can take over late, but even that's a long shot. So as long as Eubanks makes weight and, gets into the cage in decent shape, she should win handily and cement herself as one of the top contenders in the UFC women's flyweight division. So Eubanks is my pick. Now this brings us to the main event of the preliminary card in the featherweight division. We have Jason Knight, who is 20-5, taking on Jordan Rinaldi, who is 13-6. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Knight open -230, the comeback on Rinaldi at +170. Right now looking over BetDSI, it's -265 for Knight, the comeback on Rinaldi at +215. So opener about ballpark and the early action coming in a little bit more so on Knight, but there is two reaction here as well. And I think it's a fair line where it's at right now. I think Knight should have an edge in this fight and he should be favored, but this is going to be another war. And you know what? The inconsistency for me bothers me with Knight. I mean, he came in to the UFC and I mean, he opened up a lot of eyes with his performances, the pressure that he puts on, his toughness, his ability to finish fights. I mean, man, a well-rounded fighter, just relentless on the ground off his back. You just are never in a safe spot with Knight. But then his performance against Lamas was definitely an eye-opener. I mean, how he ended up getting blown out like he did. And then, you know, he backed that up with a couple decision losses in a row here against Benitez and Amir Khani. So he's a little bit in a funk, and I'm surprised to see him, especially with, you know, the way he's been getting beat. Now, again, he's a warrior. He puts on good shows, and his last decision loss over Amir Khani, he definitely had his moments there. So I just think he's starting to be a little bit more consistent, and I'm surprised that, you know, he showed some of those weaknesses in his area, in some of those areas. And I think Rinaldi's the type of fighter that's very experienced. He is dropping to 145 pounds again, so I think this is a good matchup for him in terms of he'll be able to probably – control the fight at some parts. I mean, I think Rinaldi has decent striking. He's got decent wrestling. He's got decent ground game in all aspects of the game as well. So I think it's not going to be an easy fight for Knight, but I do favor Knight in this spot as well because I think Rinaldi has potential to make a little bit more mistakes. I think Knight could be the more dangerous fighter of the two here. I think Knight is the better finisher. I think he can give him some fits on the ground, even if Knight's on his back. So I do favor Knight in this spot, but I would not lay the chalk here either. And this, again, I said earlier, there's a lot of dog or pass situations. I would probably stay away from this one more than anything else, but I think this is another dog or pass situation. Again, until we see some more consistency, we see Knight get back on track a little bit and we could trust him a little bit more. It's kind of tough in this spot because, again, Rinaldi is a very game fighter and he's going to come to fight here. And I think I wouldn't be surprised at all if he pulls off this upset win. So tough one to call, tough one to bet, but I'm going to slightly lean towards Knight as well. And I think he probably gets this fight, gets the W here in this spot.
Yeah, big question here because Jason Knight kind of got broken by Ricardo Lamas. I mean, Lamas just obliterated Knight when they fought. And Knight at the time was, you know, in the top 15. He was on the rise. He was a kind of a surging contender in the featherweight division. And then since then, Knight got obliterated by Gabriel Benitez. And then in his last fight, you know, after a strong start, he got taken down and dominated on the ground by Makwan Amirkhani. So he's now on a 3-fight losing streak after being kind of on top of the world and calling people out and being somebody that the UFC was really pushing. But Jordan Rinaldi, you know, he's kind of got a game that could potentially stifle Knight. I mean, Rinaldi is a pretty solid wrestler with decent submission defense. So if he can get a hold of Knight and drag him to the canvas and stay out of trouble, he could definitely win this fight. I mean, Rinaldi is a big, physical, strong fighter, and he's dropping down to the featherweight division from lightweight. So he's going to be just slightly bigger than Knight, and Knight usually has the size and reach on most people. So that is something to consider here, but on the feet, Knight's going to be the aggressor. You know, he's not a technician on the feet, but he throws with some good power, with a high volume, and he outworks people. So he's definitely going to have the edge in the stand-up against Rinaldi. And then on the ground, Knight is definitely more dangerous in terms of submissions. I mean, he is always looking to sweep and submit and wrap his opponent up with something, rubber guard, you name it. But, you know, Amir Khani was able to stay out of that, you know, spider web of danger. And if Rinaldi's able to do that too, he could pull this out. But Rinaldi has not had nearly the success in the UFC that Amir Khani had. So I'm going to side with Jason Knight here. I think that he could potentially catch Rinaldi with something on the ground. And I think that he could also definitely catch Rinaldi on the feet. And Rinaldi is a little chinny, and he could definitely, you know, get finished as well. So I think Jason Knight finally bounces back, but I mean, his back is definitely against the wall, and you know, he definitely has not been the same fighter since the Llamas fight. So definitely do not lay the juice on this one either. But Jason Knight is my pick. Now moving on to the pay-per-view main card, we have a middleweight contest between Derek Brunson, who is 18-6, and Israel Adesanya, who is 14-0. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Adesanya opened minus 260, the comeback on Brunson at plus 180. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently Adesanya minus 290, the comeback on Brunson at plus 225. And recently, it was up over 3-1, about 330, 3.5-1 or so, and now there's some action coming back in on Brunson. So early on, Adesanya's popularity, his performance so far in the UFC opened up a lot of eyes. The backers definitely came in his way against Brunson, which seems to be a declining fighter, seems to be definitely on the wrong side of things. I mean, in his career, I mean, he's getting older. He's had a lot of opportunities so far in the UFC. And unfortunately for him, he got towards the top, but he just can't get over that hurdle. And Adesanya is one of these guys that's definitely a rising contender. And so this is basically a matchup of, hey, Brunson, if you're going to make another run, this is your last shot here against a surging contender in Adesanya. Adesanya, if you're going to ever get a title shot or ever have success in the UFC, you need to defend good, solid wrestlers, and that's exactly what Brunson is. So this is your classic battle, striker versus wrestler. Now, this is by far the best wrestler that Adesanya has ever faced in Derek Brunson. Brunson is probably underrated in most of people's eyes right now. Those of you that are listening that have seen Brunson fight and are not too fond of him or don't think he's very good, I'll tell you what, he is one of the best wrestlers in the UFC on roster. I mean, the guy has a really good takedown game, and he's going to definitely push the pace and try to get Adesanya down. Now, it's Adesanya. Can he deliver the knockout blow before he gets on his back, or can he get off his back repeatedly and wear Brunson out? Because Brunson has had conditioning issues in the past. He wears down his fights goes. He seems to have addressed that a little bit, and he seems to be performing a little bit better. But again, defensively, he is also a liability because the way he just goes into these fights with – at times crazy aggression and leaves himself open is not a good thing. And Adesanya will definitely be taking advantage of that if Brunson's not careful. So Brunson needs to set up his takedowns with good thinking and good game plan and the ability to kind of close that gap safely and get the fight to the ground. Because if not, Adesanya does have that knockout threat. So that's why you're seeing a big favorite here. A lot of people believe that Adesanya will catch Brunson on the way in, or he'll be able to keep the fight upright and then pick Brunson apart on the feet. Brunson does have a little bit of knockout power, so he does have a puncher's chance against anybody in the division, obviously, but this is not the spot where he wants to test that out. He wants to get this fight to the ground, and I think he can. I mean, I'm on the fence with this fight, believe it or not. I think a lot of you guys are going to be shocked if Adesanya loses this fight, but I won't be because I think Brunson's wrestling is definitely good enough to get this fight down. Now, can he repeatedly get this down, keep him down, or even maybe possibly finish on the ground? I think there's levels of a difference here on the ground. Even if these guys are standing up, there's levels of a difference there as well. Adesanya is definitely a way better fighter, more precise. I mean, just worlds ahead of Brunson on the feet, but Brunson is worlds ahead of Adesanya on the ground. So it depends on whose realm and what element, you know, how the fight takes place in. And I think that's why you're going to see an intriguing battle here. So hopefully this fight plays out a little bit. I want to see Brunson test Adesanya. I want to see what Adesanya can do in this fight if he is facing some serious adversity with being put on his back here in this spot. So I don't want to see Brunson get out there and just get knocked out early on. And then there's still some question marks remaining about Adesanya. If he's legit, I want to see him stuff the takedowns clearly, and I want to see him do his thing on the feet. And I think he can do that, and I'm going to pick him to win, but it's not a confident pick. As confident all you guys that are betting this fight up. So I would not lay the chalk here either. It is definitely a dog or pass situation. I think Brunson does still have some value, even though the line's dropping a little bit. So my money would go Brunson's way. It would not go Adesanya's way. But that said, like I said, it's going to be an intriguing fight. I'm looking forward to seeing who passes this test. Will Brunson kind of regain some of that momentum and prove to people that he's still a legit contender? Or would Adesanya prove to everybody that his takedown ability is good enough that he can contend and possibly win that world title? So a big fight. I'm looking forward to this one as well. My pick is going to be Adesanya, but it's definitely a dog or pass situation.
And I completely see a path to victory for both sides. With Derek Brunson, he can win this fight both ways. I mean, he has, Nick mentioned that he has a little bit of power. He has a lot of bit of power. I mean, Derek Brunson has ferocious knockout power. I mean, this guy, and he can pull off the knockout against good strikers. I mean, we've seen it before. He steamrolled Uriah Hall, and he also knocked out Lyoto Machida on the feet. So, he absolutely can, win this fight on the feet. That being said, he's not going to win a technical striking battle against hardly anybody. I mean, he wings, haymakers from, the nether world. I mean, he just wings them. And, Israel Adesanya being such an experienced, savvy, technical striker, he should be able to see most of that stuff coming and get out of the way and counter-strike effectively. So, I mean, if Brunson's going to win by knockout in this fight, at least on the feet, it's going to have to happen in the first, minute of the fight. Because after that, I don't think Adesanya is going to get caught with anything. That being said, Brunson does have, a solid takedown game. And, being a good wrestler, you can go back and see some times when Brunson was facing some talented strikers and he went to his wrestling, UFC debut, Chris Lieben, a guy known for his knockout power, Brunson took him down 4 times. Brunson takes on Lorenz Larkin, a dangerous striker, took him down 4 times, won the decision. Brunson took on Anderson Silva, one of the most dangerous strikers of all time. Brunson took him down twice and arguably should have won that decision. He took down, he got takedowns against Yoel Romero of all people, and was winning that fight before getting finished late in the third round. So, Derek Brunson is not somebody that you should be sleeping on. Now, yeah, is his technique on the feet, sloppy and laughable at times, against a really technical, mastermind like Adesanya? Yeah, but do not sleep on this guy. With the power and with the wrestling, that can make up for the lack of striking technique. And if Brunson does get top position, you can absolutely be fearful here for Adesanya, because Adesanya has not been put on his back by a wrestler of Brunson's caliber yet. And Adesanya has faced 3 people so far in his UFC run, and he's been taken down by all 3 of them. So if Brunson takes him down and keeps him down, this could be a really bad night for Adesanya. That being said, if Adesanya can keep his distance and force Brunson to shoot from the outside, he should be able to stifle those takedown attempts. If Brunson's able to close the distance, it gets a lot more interesting. But, Adesanya having an 80-inch reach works to his advantage. He's 3 inches taller. If he can keep Brunson at the edge of that reach, then he's going to be in pretty good shape. I mean, this guy is so technical and sharp with his striking. I mean, he can really fluster people, really frustrate them. He has great jabs, great kicks. So if Brunson is not able to get that striking game going, the wrestling game going, or that early blitz going, Adesanya is just going to pick him apart. You saw what happened with Brunson when Robert Whittaker was able to figure him out. And Whittaker figured him out pretty quick. And he took Brunson out bad. Ben Brunson also is a little bit chinny. I mean, he's been knocked out ferociously by Jacare twice in the first round. So Adesanya definitely could put Brunson away quickly as well. So this fight could go either way, but I'm going to side with the wrestler here. I think Brunson does get the takedowns. I think he aggressively shoots in, puts Adesanya on his back, and can keep him there. So I'm going to side with Derek Brunson. I'm not crazy confident about it, obviously, because Adesanya is, you know, this undefeated potential superstar. But we still really haven't seen Adesanya tested against a good wrestler, and this is a huge, huge test for him. And I'm not 100% convinced that he's going to pass it. So my pick is going to be Derek Brunson. Now, sticking with the middleweight division, we have Carl Roberson, who is 6-1, taking on Jack Marshman, who is 22-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Roberson opened minus 185, Marshman plus 145. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's minus 290 for Roberson, the comeback on Marshman at plus 225. So more action coming in Roberson's way. I get it. Marshman just doesn't seem like one of those guys that people want to go out to the betting window and lay down a lot of money on. Man, I'll tell you what, the guy brings it though. He's a talented fighter in his own right. Former Cage Warriors fighter. Of course, we know that. And again, I compliment those guys all the time because I do like that organization. I think they produce a lot of quality fighters. So Marshman, just another one of those guys. And he comes to fight. He's definitely improving. He's showing signs of better takedown defense, and on the feet, he's an animal. He's got knockout power. He's got killer instinct. He's got, again, on the ground, he's not all that bad. He's got some ability to get a guillotine choke or whatnot as well, but oftentimes he ends up on his back and not top position on the ground. So more than not, he likes to keep the fight standing and have success there. But that's exactly what Roberson likes to do as well. He's got the kickboxing background. We know he's a great striker. I think overall his wrestling is probably ahead of Marshman's right now. And I know he got beat on the ground. Both these guys got beat on the ground by better grapplers in their last fight, of course. But here against each other, I think they match up okay, and they're obviously going to be safe in that territory. But I should say Roberson wouldn't surprise me if he does get a takedown here and starts to work on the ground a little bit, because that's I don't want to say an easy path to victory for him, but I think it's definitely something he can consider to have some success at against Marshman. On the feet, I think Roberson can also obviously have success. I mean, he's going to be a little bit faster. I think he's a little bit more technically sound, and I think he could be a little bit more effective. But this is another spot where you're laying almost 3-1 in a striker versus striker matchup. I don't know. I mean, Marshman does have enough power to definitely make your night end pretty quickly as well, so be careful with that. But that said, I do think Roberson's a better fighter. I think he's got more upside as well, and I think he probably gets it done here against Marshman. So should be another good fight. This is a sneaky good fight card from top to bottom, even though there's some chalk on this card, but there should be some exciting fights, and this is another one. So the pick is Roberson to win.
What's funny is both of these two fighters got absolutely obliterated by first round submission in their last fights against Cesar Mutange and Antonio Carlos Jr. respectively. But I would say that Carl Roberson is clearly the better fighter compared to Jack Marshman. Marshman is a bit more of the brawling boxing style, and if that doesn't work for him, he doesn't really have much of a fallback plan. Marshman isn't a great wrestler. He isn't a great kicker. He isn't a great submission artist. I mean, if he can't just stand and bang and hurt his opponent and either win a brawl or knock his opponent out, he's in trouble. Roberson comes from more of a kickboxing background, so he can mix it up a little bit better on the feet. And Roberson actually has a pretty decent ground game. I know he got submitted by Mutange, but I mean, Mutange is one of the best ground fighters in the division. And Roberson actually has picked up submissions already in his UFC career. So I think if this fight goes to the floor, Roberson will have the edge. I think on the feet, Roberson mixes it up a little bit better. So realistically, I think Marshman has more of a puncher's chance than anything. And I think Roberson can outwork him on the feet, or if it goes to the ground, Roberson should have the edge. So overall, I just think this is Roberson's fight to lose, and it should be entertaining. I don't know if it's a pay-per-view quality fight, but you know, that's just what happens sometimes when some other fights fall apart. But Roberson's definitely my pick. Now, sticking with the middleweight theme, we have a David Branch, who is 21-4, taking on Jared Cannonier, who is 10-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Branch opened minus 300, the comeback on Cannonier plus 220. Right now, you're seeing Branch sitting at -410 over at BetDSI, the comeback +310 on Cannoneers. So again, line margins tighten up and a little bit more actually coming in on Branch. Not surprising. I mean, styles make fights. We were talking about that in the last fight, and this is the last couple fights, and this is the same situation here. With obviously Branch being the more well-rounded fighter of the two. Cannoneer, though, man, I'll tell you what, he's been a pretty solid fighter. I think he's a very good fighter. He gets better fight by fight as well, and he's dropping down to middleweight, so this should make things interesting. But he is taking this fight on short notice, so this is kind of a head-scratcher in some ways, but he has to take the opportunity. I mean, against a very highly ranked fighter, a respected fighter like David Branch, stepping in and getting the W on short notice, you're going to open up a lot of eyes, and you'll be an instant contender in most people's opinion. So I understand why Cannoneer is taking this fight. He kind of has nothing to lose here. Branch is expected to win. He's definitely the better mixed martial artist here. I think Branch is capable of hanging with Cannoneer on the feet. He's capable of obviously getting a fight to the ground. And on the ground, he's going to be just way above levels above Cannoneer on the ground as far as top control, as far as jiu-jitsu skill goes as well. Now, Cannoneer, hey, we got to say, his ground defense has seemed to be pretty good, even against Glover Teixeira not being able to sub him. That's pretty impressive. So I don't think he's going to be an easy guy to finish for Branch on the ground, but Branch should still be able to get some takedowns if he needs them. And again, on the feet, I think it's going to be competitive. I think Cannoneer, that's his best shot, though. He does have some knockout power. He has ability to hurt people on the feet. And I think if it stays up long enough and Branch – you know, let's a punch or two slip in there, Cannoneer can definitely win this fight, but that's his opening, I think, to win it. He has to, you know, get a punch through or, you know, a heavy strike through and to finish Branch and rock him. Outside of that, I think Branch does get the decision. I think Branch is capable of doing anything he wants pretty much in this fight. If he wants to get it down, he'll take it down. Like I said, if he wants to keep it standing, he'll keep it standing. So it's Branch's fight to win or lose. That's why the early action's going that way as well. I think it's probably right, but at this point, it's tough to bet, so stay away from this fight. I think Branch does get the W, though.
Yeah, it's really been intriguing to see Jared Cannoneer, I mean, who started as a heavyweight in the UFC, and now he's dropping all the way down to the middleweight division, and this is his middleweight debut. And what a debut against a top 10 UFC middleweight in David Branch. Branch is very dangerous. I mean, the guy is... went on a tremendous run outside the UFC. And then when he came to the UFC, lived up to the hype. I mean, he had Luke Rockhold in a lot of trouble. He had the impressive performance, most recently against Thiago Santos, a guy that is a ferocious striker, and Branch actually hurt him on the feet and, ended up getting a TKO victory. So, major props to David Branch in that performance, because Santos is definitely one of the more dangerous fighters in the middleweight or light heavyweight divisions. So you can't sleep on Branch on the feet, and you definitely can't sleep on Branch on the ground. I mean, the guy is a very accomplished Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt on the canvas, and Jared Cannoneer can definitely be exposed on the canvas. I mean, we've seen it repeatedly now. In his UFC run, while he can be knocked out on the feet too, we saw that in his debut, against Sean Jordan, and then most recently Dominic Reyes. So, and then, but sandwiched in between all that, Cannoneer was taken down and controlled by Glover Teixeira, and he was taken down and controlled by Jan Błachowicz. So, if, David Branch wants to really just have a smooth sailing type of performance here, he should probably be looking to take Cannoneer down and keep him down. But, you know, if he wants to be more entertaining, he can play with fire, because while Cannoneer can be knocked out on the feet, I mean, he is an exceptional athlete with a lot of power. You know, Cannoneer has picked up some pretty impressive performances against the likes of Cyril Asker, Ian Kutalaba, which was a very quality win for him, and then also against Nick Rorick. So, I could totally see David Branch getting caught if he screws around too much on the feet, because Cannoneer is a good athlete with a lot of explosive power. But I also can see Branch knocking Cannoneer out on the feet by clipping him, or just holding him down, taking him down, grinding this out, which was kind of David Branch's ultimate path to victory for his entire run outside the UFC. So, I think if he wants to play it smart, that's what he does here, and he gets the takedowns and keeps Cannoneer down. So my pick is definitely David Branch. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have Chris Weidman, who is 14-3, taking on Ronaldo Jacare Souza, who is 25-6 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Weidman opened -125, the comeback on Souza -105. Right now looking over at BetDSI, it's -185 for Weidman, the comeback on Jacare Souza at +155. So more action coming in Weidman's way. Not really that surprised. Again, styles make fights, as we just said. Stylistically, this should be the case where Weidman's wrestling comes into play and he uses it in reverse to keep this fight upright. And if he does so, he should have the striking advantage over Jacare Souza, especially as far as chins go. I mean, we've seen that that's been a little bit of kryptonite in Jacare's fights in the past, even as of recently. I mean, he does get rocked in fights. He's a warrior though. He won't quit. We've seen it time and time again that he does get rocked early in some fights and he's able to come back in and do well in fights. But still, I mean, that's why you're seeing the liability there of Jacare Souza. I think if he's not able to get this fight to the ground, even though his striking has come a long way, I mean, I've said it time and time again in different podcasts, I'm more than impressed with Jacare Souza's striking ability. I mean, the guy coming from the world-class jiu-jitsu background that he has to be able to get his striking to the point where it's at right now, that's phenomenal. I mean, the guy is a legit, decent striker on the feet. And that's why even on the feet here, Weidman cannot take Jacare lightly. Jacare has power. He can knock you out with his kicks. I mean, he's got heavy hands as well. Again, this is not an easy fight. So I actually think the line got bet up a little bit too high. I think Weidman should be favored in this fight because, again, stylistically, I think he is the more dangerous fighter. I do trust his chin a little bit more as well. But make no mistake, both these guys are on the decline. Both these guys are not what the fighters that they were once in their prime. And that's why you can't even really trust either one of these guys all that much. So if you guys are betting this fight, again, it shouldn't be a large bet. I think this fight realistically could go either way because we've seen Weidman, if he's not able to keep this fight upright, if he doesn't fight smart, if he makes a mistake and he gets put on the ground, Jacare Souza will finish him on the ground, will have his way with him on the ground. I mean, Weidman, we all know, has a pretty decent grappling background in his own right, but we've seen him get exposed by Luke Rockhold on the ground. Now, of course, that was a grueling fight. But just imagine what Jacare Souza would do on the ground to Weidman as well. Get positioned like he did, mount and possibly, and finish him on the ground. So Weidman does not want any part of Jacare Souza on the ground. Trust me. He wants to keep this fight upright. And if he does, I think he can win upright. I think he can do enough damage. And again, I think the heart and the toughness of both guys is there. But I just think that Jacare's chin will, in a firefight, let down more so than Weidman. So with that said, I think Weidman probably is smart enough to keep this upright. And if he does so, he probably wins the fight. So I pick Weidman, but do not lay almost 2-1 in this fight. It's another case where it's probably a dog or pass situation where the line is right now, but I'm going to have to pick Weidman as far as an overall pick for MMA Oddsbreaker staff picks. So a little disclaimer here as well, since this is obviously one of the last fights, our official staff picks will be on MMAOddsbreaker.com on fight day. So there's a couple fights that Brian and I are both on the fence about. And after weigh-ins, you know, that could sway us one way or the other. And we make our final selections that will be on MMAOddsbreaker.com. So this is a case where I might flip the pick from Weidman to Jacare Souza here. I doubt it, but this is a case where it could be. So that's why I'm even mentioning that right now. So the pick right now is Weidman to get the W. But again, I can't trust either one of these guys. These are two of the best middleweights ever in the sport, in my opinion. But they're hard to trust in 2018 because they both are flawed and they've showed it. So the pick is Weidman.
You know, what's crazy is I think this is actually a more entertaining fight that I'm looking forward to than the original announced matchup of the Weidman-Rockhold rematch. You know, Weidman is a guy that has just been so frustrating, because when he was at his best, I mean, he looked unstoppable. And then he went on that 3-fight losing streak when he lost to Rockhold, Romero, and Musasi, all by finish, and all by a finish in fewer and fewer rounds, fourth round, then third round, then second round. And then Gastelum almost took him out in the first round of his last fight, but then he survived it and then came back and then ended up taking out Gastelum. So, you know, how much can you trust Weidman at this point? You know, he's had multiple knee injuries. He's had some problems with his neck. It's difficult. And the guy, when he was at his physical prime, he was definitely one of the best fighters on the planet. I mean, good knockout power, good pacing, great wrestling, you know, just could stifle anybody in the middleweight division. But that hasn't quite been the case, since then. So, against Jacare, who is also an extremely talented but also flawed fighter, that makes this fight so intriguing. Jacare has a ton of power on the feet. He is crazy athletic and has some great explosion. And on the ground, he's one of the most dangerous ground fighters in the middleweight division. So, and that's something that you really have to be concerned about with Weidman, because, Weidman has been exposed defensively on the canvas. Now, offensively, Weidman's dangerous with ground and pound with his wrestling, but if he gets put on his back at any point, he could be in huge trouble against Souza. I mean, you saw what happened when Weidman was on his back against Rockhold. I mean, he just got obliterated on the canvas there. And on the feet, Weidman can be exposed a little bit now as well. I mean, he doesn't have that same movement defensively. In terms of striking defense, I mean, his striking defense is actually quite a bit worse than Souza's. He gets hit a lot more often. I do think that Souza is a very capable of defeating Weidman here. The one thing that does concern me, I mean, Weidman does slow down in fights, but so does Souza. Souza's 38 years old and he is finally starting to slow down a little bit. He's been getting caught more and more often. You saw it, when Romero landed that spinning attack in the first round of their fight. You saw it when Souza slowed down dramatically against Robert Whittaker. I mean, he just got obliterated in that fight. And then most recently, it was a really close fight, but Souza did lose to Kelvin Gastelum, and he slowed down in that fight. So if my biggest issue with this fight is, while I do think that Souza can win, he might have to win by finish in the first round or second round, because if he doesn't, even though Weidman isn't like a cardio powerhouse, Souza slowing down could get him in big trouble, and Weidman is definitely capable of getting a finish in the third round if need be. So I'm going to side with Souza, though. I think that explosive power could play into his attack on the feet, and if it does go to the ground, I think Weidman could be in big trouble on the canvas as well with Souza's, elite world-class Brazilian jiu-jitsu credentials. So my pick is actually going to be Jacare Souza. Now this takes us to the main event of the evening in the heavyweight division. We have the new champion, Daniel Cormier, who is 21-1 with one no contest, taking on challenger Derek Lewis, who is 21-5 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Cormier opened -900. The comeback on Lewis at +500. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's actually -690, +440. So line margins have tightened up quite a bit. I mean, +440 and +500, it might seem like a huge drop, but it's really not. I mean, where the opener was to where it is now, just a little bit more action coming in on Lewis. The sportsbooks definitely need Cormier to pull off this win, because there is some dog action, like I said, coming in Lewis's way. There's no doubt people are going to lay that kind of bread on Lewis just to take a stab with that knockout power that he has, especially the come from behind fighter that he is oftentimes. I mean, it wasn't a fluke in his last fight that he managed to come back against Volkov. I mean, he's done it before in the past. We've seen it. So Lewis has that one punch game changing power that he could definitely do some damage here. And other than that as well, if you look, I mean, historically Lewis, when he gets taken down, he's got okay takedown defense, but I mean, he does manage to get put on his back. Even against Volkov, he got put on his back. So there's no question Cormier can get him down. But I think a lot of people are looking at whether Lewis can get up or not. And oftentimes he gets out of bad positions. He gets out of bad spots. He's got the heart and the toughness, and he gets out of bad spots, and then it makes his opponents pay for it. So this is a dangerous fight, even for a guy like Cormier. But again, we've said it now many times, styles make fights. Cormier can do what he wants here with Lewis. He knows this is stylistically an easy matchup for him. That's why he agreed to take it. I mean, I think he went on Ariel Helwani's show and even said that his hand was hurt and he wouldn't be able to fight the rest of, this year at the end of the year in December. But now all of a sudden the UFC makes this this fight for him, and he took it, no question to ask. He's going to make a ton of money on a short, quick turnaround, and for him, a quick fight that he could pick up here and probably not, have as much fear of losing to some of the other contenders. Like if he rematched Stipe, for example, obviously Stipe is a much harder test than Lewis. Even though Lewis presents a problem with that knockout power, still even a rematch, despite Cormier going out there and you know, looking good against Stipe in the first fight and getting rid of him, it's still a tougher fight. So Cormier has less danger, less risk losing his title here. He can get Lewis down and on the ground, even though Lewis in the past, as I just mentioned, has managed to get up and transition himself into a better spot and then do some damage. Against Cormier, Cormier is too smart to let that happen. So Cormier probably will get this fight to the ground. Once on the ground, Cormier will take position. He'll mount. He'll get where he wants to be, and he'll probably unload a barrage on the ground, some ground to pound, even maybe look for that neck and try to tap him out as well. I mean, Cormier is a very smart fighter. He doesn't even have to win this fight on the ground. I mean, if it does stay standing for some reason, he can strike with Lewis as well. I think he's a little bit faster. He's got knockout power. He's proven that. I mean, there was question marks a couple years back that people were saying, man, can Cormier knock people out? He doesn't have that one-punch knockout power. Well, I think he's proven that ever since. So he definitely has one-punch knockout power. And again, he's smart. He's precise. You know, he hasn't won both titles for no reason. The guy is definitely a stud, one of the best all-time fighters in the sport. His wrestling credentials speak for themselves. So styles make fights. This should be an easy fight for Cormier. But Lewis does present a little bit of danger. So with all that said, I'm not touching this fight. I'm not going to put any money down on Lewis. Those of you guys that already did, good luck to you. I love a good upset, even if I'm not on it. So I wouldn't be disappointed to see this. If it does play out that way and Lewis does land that miracle bomb and opens up everybody's eyes in shock. That being said, again, it would be a shock to me, though. Cormier is just a level above. So he should be able to get this fight to the floor and do what he wants to do. So the pick is Cormier.
Yeah, talk about, you know, backing into a title shot. I mean, it wasn't that long. I mean, yeah, Derek Lewis, technically, if you look, I mean, he's won, 9 of his last 10 fights, which is amazing. Okay. In the heavyweight division. That is a hell of a run, but there are some qualifiers there. In the one fight he lost, Mark Hunt, I mean, he got exposed and I mean, he got crushed in that fight. You know, he couldn't get the top position. He couldn't get the takedown. And Mark Hunt was just so much better than him in the stand-up. And then just picked him apart to the body, to the head, and eventually got the round 4 TKO. And Lewis retired after that fight. But then he comes out of retirement, is losing a fight to Marcin Tybura, but then gets a top position in the third round, knocks Tybura out. Then he takes on Francis Ngannou in a fight that I think before Ngannou ever fought for the title, Ngannou would have absolutely massacred Derek Lewis. But Ngannou, for some reason, just hardly threw a strike the whole fight. And then Lewis ends up walking away with a decision in that fight in one of the worst fights of all time. And then in his last fight against Volkov, Lewis is getting killed. He got outstruck in this fight. And this fight stayed on the feet for almost the entire time. He got outstruck 121-39 in significant strikes. Volkov was absolutely obliterating him. He had Lewis on the ropes about 5 or 6 different times. He was just pot-shotting him from distance, and Lewis had no chance. And then literally in the last like 30 seconds of the fight, Lewis just starts charging forward like a crazy person, wings a shot, clips Volkov on the jaw, knocks out his mouthpiece, and then knocks him out with ground and pound and gets the win out of nowhere. And now he's fighting for the belt. So, you know, against Daniel Cormier, I just don't think Lewis is going to have a good matchup here at all. Cormier is the faster fighter. He is by far the more technical striker. I think Cormier can land at will, even though Lewis is the bigger, stronger guy. I think Cormier can land whenever he wants. Cormier, with his wrestling credentials, can take Lewis down whenever he wants. Lewis is, you know, and he's not easy to take down. He's not easy to keep down. So I don't know how well that'll work. But, you know, and Lewis also, you know, when he gets hit, he also tends to just kind of turtle up and then just eat a ton of shots. And he does not respond well when he gets cracked. And I think that will definitely play to Daniel Cormier's you know, speed and technique advantage as well. The big thing Lewis has, though, is power. I mean, if this guy gets in top position against anybody in the planet, or in the UFC at least, he is capable of knocking them out with ground and pound. I mean, he just has that ability to put that amount of force behind his punches and people go night-night when he hits them from top position. And Lewis has translated some of that ridiculous ground and pound power to the feet. He just, you know, isn't the greatest technician, but if he does land that shot, people get in big trouble. I mean, you saw it against Volkov. He finally connected there right at the end of the fight. You saw it against Travis Brown. He landed a big shot on the feet before taking him out on the ground. So we saw it against Doug Gonzaga. So, you know, Derek Lewis, he has the power to win this fight. But other than that, you know, Daniel Cormier pretty much has him outclassed everywhere else. And unless Cormier's hand just completely fractures, I think that he should be in really good shape here. This is basically just a tune-up fight for Cormier while he waits for Brock Lesnar to get through all of his testing protocol and then set up a super fight with Brock Lesnar. So my pick is going to be Daniel Cormier. I think he can win with wrestling. He can win with the striking. He can win just by outworking Lewis because Lewis does not have very good conditioning either. So basically Cormier wins however way he wants as long as he just doesn't get caught. So Daniel Cormier is going to be my pick. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 230. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.